why do we need a gender-neutral battle sub? Why is this such an issue? But I wanted to think about this. If you had a choice between a piece of equipment where you have to consider the gender of who is operating that piece of equipment, or a piece of equipment where it does not matter who you put to use that piece of equipment, which one is a more useful tool? You know what I mean? Like having a submarine where you can dispatch, Navy officers, regardless of gender, to fill gaps in the service personnel, I think is a far more useful approach. You know, I think that's the piece that's being missed in a lot of this debate. Oh, why is it gendered? Why are we feminizing submarines? We're not feminizing submarines. We're just making it so that if there is a spare bed, we can get the next available service person in that bed. You know what I mean? Like it's a more versatile tool, and that's essentially what this vehicle is. It's a tool to be used by the Navy, and having it being able to be utilized by any of their service personnel, regardless of gender, I think makes for a much more effective machine. I wanted to bring it up because there has been this sort of right-wing reaction to, oh my God, gender-neutral sub. But the piece that I think has been dropped from the conversation is, I just feel like it'd be much more efficient.
Honestly, no, it sounds like this is a side effect of something else and they've overblown it. So I've known people who've been stationed on submarines, and a constant complaint is that there is zero privacy. You're on that boat for 1 to 6 months, depending on the kind of deployment, the kind of submarine. That's why diesel versus nuclear is relevant, because nuclear can last much longer out in the ocean. And sometimes they'll go underwater and they won't come up for weeks on end. They'll raise a snorkel every so often, exchange the air, and then just go back down. And there is zero privacy whatsoever, and it can be incredibly stressful. So if anything, what they probably did is they just built a submarine that was better to accommodate moments of privacy where you didn't have people staring at you while you're pooping. And as a side effect, it benefits female naval officers. It is probably actually what happened. And it's probably just they built this thing that's a little bit more private, a little bit more considerate of the officers who are on that thing for months on end. And, as a side effect, by the way, open bracket, it's also good for women and it's gender neutral, close bracket. And somebody zoomed in on that part of the news release and they're like, oh my God, gender neutral submarine, where it's probably just more like user friendly.
That's exactly, you've nailed it. Okay. So in 2010, oh, sorry, up until 2010, not that long ago, women were banned from submarines. No women on a submarine. I don't know if it's like an old pirate superstition where
Well,
like
I've known people who've worked on submarines, and I can tell you that's a reputation that submarines in particular have is the first couple of weeks, everyone is a gentleman, and then after that, somebody breaks the seal, they get frustrated because these are young men.
Where the ban was lifted in 2023, sorry, 2010, let me get my math right here. As of about last year, there were now 609 women in the naval submarine fleet. And what they had done is they took these older submarines, which are notoriously difficult to move around, zero privacy, just like you mentioned, and they attempted to kind of retrofit them a bit. So it's less obviously a lack of privacy, like it's a little bit more accessible. They're like, okay, we'll try and make it less of an issue. But this new one, the USS New Jersey, they built it from scratch. And they were like, okay, we want any of our service personnel to be able to reach the top bunk, because otherwise you have to be monitoring who can and cannot get in the top bunk and vice versa. They built it from the ground up to be able to fit any of their military personnel, not just the men. That's the big difference with this particular submarine, is that they've built it with a degree of privacy in mind, a degree of accessibility in mind, making it a more functional ship compared to the retrofitted versions that have
It's
been
also worth
put in.
mentioning that there are always fewer beds than there are people on the boat. They sleep in shifts. And it's not like two people are assigned to a bed and then you swap back and forth. It's you do rotate sometimes. Like all the beds are taken, you're just gonna have to jump into a different one that you don't normally sleep in. So the fact that it's like that, the fact that, because normally you'd be like, well, who cares? Just get the bottom bunk. Well, what happens if everyone's on the bottom bunk already and they're already, are you just gonna wake somebody up and say, go up a level? I'm too short. Like it's yeah, no, it is relevant that you should be able to get to every bunk. It'd be interesting if they kind of designed the new bunks to be more like the Japanese pod hotels, so that they've got like a little like shutters that I've actually slept in one before, and they got these like rolling shutters like on a bread box or like a secretary, like the piece of furniture of the secretary. It's like this rolling shutter,
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
and it closes down, and then you got your little privacy, and there's not a lot of room to move, but it's comfortable enough. Hope you're not claustrophobic. If you got that, then yeah. Because I mean, as I said, like all my friends who were on submarines, they said they would have killed even just for like a little bit of cloth, just a little curtain. That would have been great. They didn't even have that. It was just open. Everything was just out there. So yeah, designing it to be a little bit more user friendly, especially when you have people who are on this thing for weeks or months. Sort of like the first bombers that the US deployed during World War II, they didn't put in a toilet because they thought that it would only be like 3 or 4 hours. So why do you need that? And then they got in the habit, the soldiers got in the habit of taking like an old coffee can with them, the big ones, like the big, like 5 liter tin cans. And
Soldiers,
And that's where the term like the can comes from.
Wow, more you
Yeah.
know.
Yeah. And it was just they just neglected that. There's a long history of military efficiency, meaning soldier misery. And I think this is just the submarines are catching up.
So to conclude, what do you think of a gender-neutral submarine?
Are they still going to refer to it as a she?
I do believe, well, it's the USS New Jersey. Not really a gendered name,
And
but they could have
is
called it
she
USS Alex
nuclear
or
though?
USS Noah. But we'll move on from there. But the other thing that came up that has been causing a lot of stir and conversation, and it was actually a table conversation we had recently, and that relates to RuPaul's Drag Race. Now, I know that not all gay people watch RuPaul's Drag Race, and you don't.
I only watch it when you make me.
You only watch it when I make you watch it. And the
He
thing,
ties me down, he drugs me, he whips my feet. It's a miserable experience.
the point is, we're being satirical here. Just to confirm, Sebastian, we are being satirical here.
You do whip my feet, though.
No, you know what? I'm gonna have to edit this whole show and just remove all the references. No, of course it's a joke. It's a joke. But all right. So the reason why I wanted to mention RuPaul's Drag Race is because they have a version. They have franchises all over the world, and right now there's a Canada versus the world where there's maybe less than half the contestants are Canadian, and then there's the crème de la crème of the other nations come and compete as sort of visiting competitors. The Americans caught in and did their own version. I think it's Global All Stars versus the World, or I don't know what the name of it is, but the idea being that every country sends, or rather, each RuPaul Drag Race franchise sends somebody and they compete against this one American, and there's a British queen, a Canadian queen, a Dutch queen, a Thai queen, like everyone's there. But the thing that's been most noticeable to me, and it came up around a conversation of like Eurocentrism and Anglocentrism, which means a perspective on the world or a take that prioritizes or create puts into a but centers and anchors your perspective on what ought to be or what is good or what is quality, what is likable within the context of the European experience or the Anglo-American experience.
Although I think in this case, it's more that they neglect the possibility that there is a non-Anglo-American American
Yeah.
experience.
So we've touched on this a little bit here and there in the past, and I think I want to clarify here. One of my long-standing critiques of RuPaul's Drag Race is that it tends to homogenize drag culture. It kind of paints all drag queens with one brush. You do see, a quirky drag queen there and a comedy queen there, and they're all a little bit different. But the style of drag, the historical origins of that drag, even lip syncing, is distinctly Anglophone. It is distinctly pulling out of the ball scene of New
Yeah, it's the
York.
ball scene. It's Chicago, New York. Because I remember one of the seasons that I watched, actually, probably the season I watched most with you. I don't remember which one it was, but there was a Canadian queen who was originally a clown, clown first, went into drag second, and took some of the clowning methods into drag. So it was like clown drag, but it wasn't clown as in like Bobo the Clown. It was more like Cirque du Soleil, like physical performances and miming and exaggerated stuff. And actually not that bad. I wouldn't mind seeing a performance by this queen outside of RuPaul's Drag Race, where they were forced to lip sync for her life and all that nonsense. Like I would have been interested to see. It would have been like the kind of thing you see on the Muppet Show, like a variety show, like something very interesting, something very different and actually kind of wholesome in some ways, and not RuPaul's style of drag, and did poorly in that season by the judges anyway.
I think what I might to explain here, it's like if all of these different countries had their own ball sport. Could be rugby, could be American football, could be soccer, and then they're all being pulled in to compete in American football. Sure, they're all athletic, they all can move around the pitch, they all have a vague grasp of the rules. But it's that nuanced depth of knowledge that is, those who have a bit of a home field advantage of really knowing that sport and that history, compared to others outside of that. And this particular season, it's become really evident that the non-English speaking countries are not being given the same sort of runway as the English speakers. It's because, frankly, they're speaking a common language. They're drawing on more of a common experience. And the result is that the judging appears to be favoring this English competition. But I don't know, it's hard to see this because is it, Anglo-American centricism? Is it homogenizing queer culture? That's one of the biggest critiques. It makes me think. And I don't often think about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, but on this occasion, I am drawn to the words of Ahmadinejad, where the former president of Iran laughed and said, "We don't have gays in Iran." But what he was a mistranslation, and essentially the point was being that sort of Western American construct of a gay identity does not exist in Iran. Are there men in Iran that have sex with other men and have relationships with other men? Absolutely. Do they identify with the West Hollywood gay scene? Probably not. Probably
Probably
not.
a couple of them, maybe.
Yeah, maybe the WeHo gays there and the gays of Tehran, different gays, different gays. And I don't know, I'd love to see a competition
That
that
acknowledges
somebody.
that.
Yeah, that where if a drag queen comes out and gives a traditional dance of the Maori people, playing with historical representations of gender in Maori history, I'm like, wow, that is a fascinating portrayal that's distinct to your culture. I don't need everyone lip syncing to Kesha. You know what I
Well,
mean?
I mean, the answer to that would be, is that drag or is that something else at that point?
But
Because
I think.
then, I mean, you do get, I mean, that is a valid, I mean, that's not even an argument or a complaint. It could just be like, that deserves its own space. That's not drag, that's something else. That would be like, I don't know, going to a ballet competition, and then somebody brings in breakdancing, and it's like it is dancing and it is worthy of its own stage, so long as it's not from Australia, but it's not ballet because ballet has a strict definition.
Yeah, Exactly. We're measuring a fish's ability to climb a tree here, and it's not great. I don't know. I think with the cultural impact that Drag Race has on the world of straight people, because let's be honest, the vast majority of the audience of RuPaul's Drag Race, just by the numbers, is
Yeah,
straight.
because the vast majority of humans are straight. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, statistically speaking, if you listen to this, you're probably
You're
straight.
probably
Not
straight,
gonna
yeah.
lie, but I don't want our listening audience to think, "Wow, Drag Race, this must be what drag is like." And it's like, no, this is
No.
what the school of RuPaul's
Yeah.
drag is like. They're all just pandering to RuPaul because that she decides who wins. Like, of
The
course,
craziest thing is when they
gonna
do drag
pander.
in the UK, and the UK has like.
Welcome back to Cancreo, home of Canada's Queen Media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Before we move on to the other stories of the day, I wanted to touch on Jackie Chan. We mentioned the Jackie Chan documentary that's been popping up all over the country. You can find it. But anyway, Jackie Chan's legacy and impact. There was a historical marker in Toronto, I think, at the location of the former Sapphire Tavern in Toronto, to recognize the impact that Jackie Chan, just for those who aren't familiar, Jackie Chan was a pioneering trans musician, really curated and helped to form the sound of Toronto, but born in Tennessee, specifically in Nashville. And the Metropolitan Historical Commission in Nashville have decided, in collaboration with local queer organizations, to commemorate Jackie Chan in a plaque in Tennessee. Jackie Chan famously disappeared off the face of the earth, had gone home to care for an elderly family member, and just that was it. I guess any other way, that was the name of the documentary, the leading track. But yeah, Nashville recognizing the incredibly talented Jackie Chan. Great news and a nice, beautiful Canadian connection. Now, you also had a story that you've decided to not tell me in advance. Is it
Yes.
submarines?
It's not about submarines. It's from the this year's winners of the Ig Nobel Prizes.
Oh, for our listeners, what is an Ig Nobel
An
Prize?
Ig Nobel. So the Ig Nobels are given by there's a science journal called the Annals of Improbable Research, and basically what they do is they comb through the literature to find scientific articles that are just interesting and different. They're a republishing thing. They want to amplify weird stories. And the Ig Nobels, to win an Ig Nobel, it's a two-step process. First, it makes you laugh, and then it makes you think. And then they just get the best of those. And usually what happens is they just do something. There's something with like weird experiment or weird methods or a weird conclusion or a weird concept, but then it actually implies something deeper. All right. Now, this year there's a whole bunch, but I want to draw your attention to the Anatomy Prize, which was awarded to a mixed team from France and Chile. The title of the published paper associated with it was Genetic Determinism and Hemispheric Influence in Hair Whorl Formation.
You know,
Okay.
I've not read this, but I did know that your hair whorl, there were studies on how it differs depending on sexual orientation.
Well, I mean, you kind of stole the thunder from me. But yeah, so in general, for the general population, 90% of, well, they started by doing with men because men have short hair. It's easier to study the hair whorl. So 90% of the general population, your hair turns clockwise. That rate is four times higher amongst gay men. What this team from France and Chile did is they confirmed that that's equally true in both the northern and the southern hemisphere.
Oh, so it's not like when you flush a toilet,
So,
hair doesn't change.
yeah, well, that's the joke, that when you flush a toilet, it goes the opposite direction, which is actually not true. But they actually confirmed that it is the same in both the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere. It's 90% clockwise either way.
But why would that make you think? Why, what thinking part of that?
Why is that true? I mean, the joke was that they were comparing it to the rumors about toilets flushing in the opposite direction. But actually, what it did is it sort of highlighted this underlying phenomenon of why do we have hair whorls at all? Why is it at differing rates? Why does it have all these sort of secondary characteristics associated with it? It's sort of like the same thing with like the relative finger length. You know, is your pinky finger no, yeah, is
No, it
your
was the
ring?
it's not the middle one, it's the two either side of your middle finger. They're the same height. It doesn't matter if your hair is whirly in North America or South America, you're probably gay. Is that the summary that you correctly deduced?
No, it's that the rotation of the earth has no impact on the rotation of your hair on your scalp. They have other ones that are kind of interesting. One was they there's a plant that can imitate other plants around it, especially pet plants that are poisonous, and they put the plant next to a plastic plant to see if it would imitate that, which it did, which asks a whole bunch of questions of how does it know? Because they used to think that it had something to do with like genetic exchange or something like that, but no one can even imitate plastic ones. But there's another one.
It is an interesting, it is a funny, And interesting story. Is your hair any gayer in the North or South Hemisphere? That's what we're here to talk about. Anyway, I think we have run out of, thankfully, run out of time. I did want to mention legal decision in Taiwan.
Yes.
They're now recognizing marriages and same-sex unions between Chinese and Taiwanese couples, even if they are married outside of China or Taiwan. This apparently is a good couple of hundred couples that are going to be impacted by this. There was a pride parade of about 16 vehicles that might seem kind of innocuous in Kharkiv and in the
Oh.
Ukraine. So this march of 16 vehicles in a city that is actively being bombed by the Russians. They had a bit of a mixed message. One part of their messaging was we should still advocate for human rights and LGBT rights. And the other message was we need more air defense to be less bombed by the Russians. So, I mean, good mixed messages, but still, Pride Parade in Kharkiv for Ukraine. Great news there. Not
I think
great.
this is an instance of mission creep and pride that most people would be okay with.
Yeah, we're okay with that. We're okay with air defense in a city that's actively being bombed, and human rights. I think that's an uncontentious position to hold. We have seen the legislation in Georgia in the Eastern Europe, very concerning. They passed legislation that could potentially ban pride parades and examples of or displaying pride flags. Within a day, a famous trans model in Georgia was murdered. Whether or not those two things are connected remains to be seen, but there is definitely a pretty frightening culture taking place in Georgia, in Eastern Europe at the moment. We will keep an eye on that and all other big gay news. And of course, some of the outrageous news like wool, hair wool patterns. You've been listening to Kenqueer. I've been Nick Smith.
And I've been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
Us up with what Space even.